This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Eric Flack has done a great job for Channel 9 as investigative reporter. Very good investigative reporters in town, despite what Ted yesterday during his little date session with the mayor at the Waldorf. Eric's been on with us before. He joins us once again, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. You can follow Eric on Twitter, on X, at Eric with a C, Flack TV. So I'll let you describe basically how we got to yesterday and what your impression of it was handled yesterday was.
I think how we got to yesterday was a failure on many levels by Virginia and Governor Youngkin to politically execute the plan that he had basically come to an agreement with for the Capitals and the Wizards to move to Potomac Yard in Alexandria. I think, as we've chronicled before, the political missteps were almost stunning, that he thought that he could just cut deal in secret without a written agreement and then basically just tell the Virginia legislature to approve it for $1.5 billion of taxpayer-backed bond money. That didn't happen. We chronicled Louise Lucas and her opposition, but the inability or the lack of foresight to clean some of that stuff up before rolling the plan ultimately doomed the plan. Yesterday in the press conference, Ted Leonsis made clear after we questioned him that he always was keeping D.C. as a plan B. And he gave the mayor credit, Mayor Bowser credit, who by all accounts swung and missed on letting him try to go to Virginia in the first time, gave the mayor credit for not giving up and not taking it personal and staying in touch. And in his words, as he saw things going south, he realized more and more that he may need to take this plan B with DC seriously. So as he got in his shot, we have the worst investigative reporters in DC because we met in the open at the Waldorf. I wanted to tell him, Ted, on behalf of all investigative journalists and journalists, we don't make enough to hang out at the Waldorf because we're not billionaires, but you know, he had his little moment. Yeah. But they had ongoing discussions, and some of the action, according to Leonsis, that D.C. began to take in the wake of his proposed move, getting serious about revamping and revitalizing that 10-quarter Gallery Place area and getting serious about making sure it's policed and getting serious about taking care of the crime, all of a sudden made him feel better about the potential of a $500 million renovation. And it's now up to 515 because they're also going to, and I actually think this is cool, spend $15 million in revamping the city is that Gallery Place, you know, open area between Clyde's and Capital One, if you've ever been down there.
Yeah,
And that's, it's going to make it more in the vision he had for what he was trying to Virginia. And then they sweetened the pot. They said, take over Gallery Place, which again allows him great financial opportunity. They got him more parking. They allowed him to, as he said, expand his footprint, not to the extent he would have been able to do in Virginia, but enough that he was okay with and ultimately embraced the idea of staying in D.C. It came together very quickly. News started to break. Whispers started to break yesterday afternoon. I think I first heard about this maybe at 2:30, 3 o'clock, something along those lines. There was a members-only council meeting just yesterday afternoon to make sure everybody was on board. Again, something Governor Youngkin in Virginia didn't do, because this hasn't passed, but they know it's going to pass on Tuesday because they've already gotten together and said, okay, are we cool with this? Are we good with this? And at that point, they called a press conference in an hour. And there we were in one of those new luxury areas at Capital One with, as you said, date night for Ted and Muriel. So it was all remarkable.
Well, I think, you know, and we talked about it yesterday in the show, the Twitter barrage by him earlier in the day was certainly a tell that something may have been coming, right?
A huge tell. I just didn't think
right. It
was going to happen in hours. But he did say at the press conference, he almost acknowledged that he was tweeting that stuff out because he knew he was going to be standing in front of us tonight. He said that night yesterday. He said that.
Yeah, so you've said a lot. Let me just mention, you know, I just rolled my eyes like I'm sure many did when he talked about date night with the mayor and the main couch at the Waldorf, and we've got to have the worst, you know, investigative and infrastructure, because, I mean, God knows he's so smart. But the irony of that is he essentially, this guy that fancies himself to be the biggest brand in town, wasn't even recognized, you know, sitting on the main couch. Because
exactly.
Typically, you know this, somebody would have saw him, somebody would have called, you know, you or an investigative reporter or tweeted out, hey, the mayor and Ted are together in the main couch at the Waldorf, but nobody even recognized it. But anyway, I digress. You know, what you said at the beginning, to me, look, I'm thrilled Eric, because all's well that ends well, and this is what I personally wanted. I didn't want them to leave the city. I think it's the best thing for not just the city, but the actual DMV, not the Delaware to the North Carolina border DMV that Ted likes to refer to, but the actual DMV. But you said something at the beginning. That press conference with Youngkin, how didn't somebody recognize that this was so far from a done deal and say we can't either do this press conference or we can't sound so definitive like it's done? And, you know, I said it at the time, and I think you and I talked about this on the air. I thought he showed very little self-awareness with respect to what the reaction would be to him leaving D.C. But why didn't somebody jump in and why didn't he recognize, wait a minute, this is Virginia? These things are hard. The money's not there yet. We haven't even gotten to the NIMBYs. They never did, by the way. Why so definitive on that day?
I've asked that question to people who have a lot of knowledge of the way these things work, and the answer I get is twofold. One is arrogance that he just thought that he was somebody, that he saw a vision, and that everybody else would see the same vision. The second explanation I've been told is that he comes from a business background and just running, you know, businesses. And in that world, what the guy at the top goes. And it showed a huge lack of awareness and a huge failure by the people around him to say, look, we may want to approach this with a different tone and maybe a little less fanfare. I asked one of the monumental people who was tasked with trying to get this through the legislature up there in Virginia, did he and Ted Leonsis spike the ball? And I think I've used this term with you before.
Yeah, you did.
Spike the ball before they crossed the goal line. And his answer, and what they continue to stand by, is, well, we had to make an announcement at some point, and we can't just negotiate this with the entire legislature behind closed doors and expect that, you know, we're not going to be able to kind of control the narrative and it's just going to leak out, which may be true, but there is a middle ground there.
Yes.
That they just failed to even acknowledge, and that D.C., although it's less council members, but D.C. got it right. You know, D.C. is bringing its council members together. They approved the money last December. Now is in the midst of trying to feverishly, you know, last second keep Leonsis and the Wizards and the Cavs from even trying to move to Virginia. But, like, they've already passed a resolution that this is going to be in the budget. Like, they had everybody on board. They brought them again on board at the last second yesterday to make sure we're all good. And there is just none of that. And I think, you know, I don't know if this is true. What Leonsis said a couple of times during the press conference last night is that he was blindsided at how bad a business people Virginia were, and that D.C. is much better business people than Virginia are. And you know, whether that's a swipe at you know, Youngkin, who he says he's still very, you know, friendly with, and who gave him permission to continue to negotiate with D.C. just in case, whether that's a swipe at, you know, Louise Lucas for blocking the deal or what have you. You know, it was clear as we got into this thing, and especially starting about a month ago, that they just never thought they had to do the legwork on the front side without, you know, consequences by announcing a deal that nobody was over there was really on board with.
You know, we're talking to Eric Flack from WUSA TV9. You mentioned about that press conference arrogance. I think there was some anger there, too, from his standpoint. I think he wanted to stick it to D.C. to show them, see, I wasn't bluffing. Because, look, at the end of the day, Ted probably had every reason to seek out something new because of the city's lack of response. You know, the city slow-rolling him. The city, you know, potentially saying we'll do something, but then saying, yeah, but we don't have the money up front. You're going to have to put it up front, and we'll raise it in bonds over the next 6 to 10 years. So I get where Ted's frustration came from, but as you said, it really lacked some sort of understanding of how things work there. And maybe they could say, look, we didn't see Luis Lucas coming. But am I right to say that it never even got to the point where, you know, maybe the biggest pushback would have come from, which would have been the not in my backyard people? We never even got to that point.
He still had to cross that hurdle. Everything I've been told is that I don't know how the protests would have been loud. But I had been told they felt much better once
about
we got
that.
Into this. And, they felt much better about, you know, the mayor was on board and they had members of the council already on board. They almost like did the work in Alexandria, but forgot to do the work in Richmond in the legislature. And I think you're right in that there was anger on Ted's part. And I think there are reasons you can say it was justified. You know, I think from his perspective, you know, I think he trusted Youngkin to get this done, quite honestly. I think he made an assumption, and it's a mistake on his part. I think he acknowledged mistakes have been made by him throughout this process. But, you know, he has a team. They brought in so many consultants. I have gotten emails and calls from, like, they're not even all monumental. They're outsourced. They're different agencies. I mean, it wasn't one. It was multiple people.
And they're still getting hurt after all of this is said and done with all consultants. I'm kidding. Oh, that's basically what happened there. I mean, it was like there were so many cooks in the kitchen, and then it ended up being Tommy Shepard. And I love Tommy, but it was like, yeah,
exactly.
I mean, unbelievable. Make a decision. We're talking to Eric Flack. I wanted to bring something up here before we get to what this means for the football team. But there was a level, too, of a bit of disingenuousness yesterday. I mean, you talked about Plan B, but didn't they just have discussions with Wes Moore in Maryland? Weren't they looking at Maryland as a possibility, too?
Yes. Listen,
did he think we forgot about that part of the story?
Well, I don't know how serious that was.
Okay.
And I don't know which way that phone call went. I think people assumed that it was Ted calling Wes Moore rather than ambitious governor reaching out and saying, what about Maryland? You know, I think those reports were pretty general. There was a conversation. I just am not sure how that conversation was initiated. I've had some conversations with some people. All I would say is I'm not sure which way that phone call went and how much that was Ted shopping his team around the V, around the DMV, rather than, you know, Maryland saying, hey, knock, knock, you know, we're open for business too. We got a stadium fund over here. You know, what do you think? It became clear, and I think the Monumental people were pretty upset about, I think a lot of people were pretty upset about that report and how it made them look. And we now know in retrospect, it was because these discussions with D.C. were extremely, you know, and they're trying to do damage control because, you know, people are making it seem like, you know, Ted's, you know, playing off all the regions against each other. So I just don't know how serious that was.
I want to look forward here in a moment because, again, for me, and I think a lot of people on this day, it's like, okay, I don't really know how we got here or care that much about it. I'm glad we got here, though. But one last thing with respect to DC's offer, which ended up being $515 million. Was there ever a chance that DC was going to take Ted's position, which was, uh-oh, Virginia, it's not going to happen. Where am I going to go? And try to leverage that situation into a lesser offer than their 11th hour offer before the press conference, you know, a couple of months ago?
There was never a chance of that.
Good.
They made it clear early on that that money would and remain on the table. And I think politically, the mayor almost had such a disastrous asterisk on her legacy as the mayor who was blamed for letting the Wizards and the Capitals leave the district and had already played footsie and tried to negotiate and tried to not give, you know, Leonsis what he wanted, which was $600 million. That I think the mayor and her administration felt so that they burned themselves so badly that they were never, ever going to make that mistake again.
It was a gift horse, really. They were lucky that Louise Lucas came around.
Absolutely. They weren't going to screw it up a second time, and they weren't going to mess around with money to screw it up a second time. When they saw that door cracked open, they were ready to kick it down, which is why they increased the sweetening of the pot.
Right. Yeah. So we'll get to, I want to ask you about what you think this means for the football team. But before that, so what is the 500 or the $800 million in aggregate, including Monumental? What's it going to look like down there when it's all done? And what kind of project is this, and how long will it take? And will they be able to play while they're doing the work, games there? I haven't read enough about that.
I had some conversations early on with people over there when they basically told me they were looking at both these options. And I was like, what do it look like? And they said, well, Potomac Yard. And then they said, you know, a phased in renovation at Capital One, where you would be able to have the teams play and not be displaced, but you would do the renovation in phases, which I think is why you see the money that DC is giving to Monumental spaced out over 3 years. I'm actually looking to find out, you know, like what more specifics they can give us about those questions. But here are some of the things that were told to me. First of all, and I think most interesting, is the way the seating in the bowl is at Capital One. It is a old school seating where it starts around the court or the ice, and then as you get higher, you move farther back as well. If you've been to a new arena, the way the seating is that the higher up you get, it's more vertical. So yeah, you're high, but you're still closer to the court. Now this seems like a mammoth task to pull off, but I know that there was conversations about trying to redo the seating to make that seating structure, that seating bowl, more in line with today's newer arenas. They have already started the process of increasing the luxury amenities for their VIPs, because that's what professional sports has become. People want to spend a lot of money for a ticket, but also they want to have a really, really first-class experience. So, for instance, because Ted had already started investing in some of this, the press conference yesterday was held in one of those new clubs that's right there on 7th Street. Mm-hmm. They're going to be adding to that. If you, the Etihad Airways luxury club, it's beautiful. It's down there, like floor level. It doesn't actually have sight lines to the court or to the ice. And they have added, you know, some of those areas where you can kind of sit on the end lines, especially for Wizards games, and just sit in a tabletop with having a server and literally be looking out on the game. But it's limited. And I think in a larger sense, you know, what today's arenas look like is you have these luxury areas that also have clear sight lines to the game. So you're at a sporting event, but you're also kind of like hanging out at a bar all at the same time. And so they're going to work on the entrances. I've heard of some suggestions of changing the outside look as well. Mm-hmm. It's a very stone building. It's not very, there's not a lot of glass. I know that was something they didn't love.
Right.
So I think the next thing is, you know, when are we going to roll out the plans? And so I think that me and I'm sure and a number of other people are starting to ask those questions.
All right. Last one for Eric Flack from WUSA Channel 9. What do you think yesterday's news means for the probability or possibility that the Washington football franchise ends up in D.C.?
So I'm not as much of a doomsday, this means they're not coming back to RFK, as I have seen some other very smart people suggesting on social media. The mayor's office said again, reinforced to me again yesterday, this changes nothing with the football team. Mayor Bowser had said, we can do them both. You know, obviously there is going to be more opposition on the council side for the football stadium than there was for the arena money, that's been well documented. And the money becomes an issue, but Josh Harris has said, and it's basketball arenas are not football arenas, but Josh Harris is, you know, trying to pay for a new arena in Philadelphia for the Sixers by himself. He's already talking about contributing as much private capital as he can for the new stadium. Obviously, there are less obstacles in Maryland, and we've heard the quotes that they're deep into discussions on Maryland, and right now D.C. still doesn't have the land, but it's trending that way. So I don't think it means that there's no chance they're going to return to RFK. The only thing I'm curious about is that, you know, Ted has cited in that email to his employees that one of the three practice facility potential sites is RFK.
Right.
So I'm unclear if the city's like, if this football thing doesn't, you know, come to fruition, and we should know that here probably in about a year, what they're going to do site-wise, I think, or less, then, you know, you have first dibs on that site. If not, let's figure out something else. So that's a big question, though.
Eric, thanks, as always. Really appreciate it. Good work on this story over the last several months. I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Later.
Yep. Eric Flack, everybody, from WUSA Channel 9 on X at Eric Flack TV. Jacob Hester is a radio host in Baton Rouge. He was at Jaden Daniels' pro day yesterday. He will join us next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and theteam980.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.